Doom Patrol, Negative Man, Elastigirl, Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action
is being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mana!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Calder. Your beloved patrol is doomed.
Hello and welcome to Waiting for Doom, the Doom Patrol podcast, which is about the Doom Patrol comic that comes out now. So we're waiting less than we used to.
Yes, hello. I'm Mike. You can find me on Twitter at avantgarve. You can reach us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. You can find us on the Waiting for Doom Facebook page. You can also check out mygreatestadventure80.blogspot.com for some excellent related posts about the show from friend of the show, Doug Zavisha. And all our episodes are available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and podbean.com. Yeah.
And I am the one called Paul, and you can find me on Twitter at reading_Hicks, H-I-X. And you can also get in touch on Twitter with our Sentient Show Twitter account, which is Wilfred, who's at WFD Pod. And we are sponsored, this podcast, not us individually, but the podcast is sponsored by Comicosity.
Yes, comicosity.com for all the comic book love. And I have to point out an article that caught my eye since we were last recording, is a column that they regularly do called Heroes, with an emphasis on the her, and it's about women in the comic industry. And the most recent article and interview in there was from friend of the show and former guest Jessica Boyd, and she had a really interesting interview with Colleen Doran, who's been doing her own book A Distant Soil for many years, and she's worked on books like The Sandman and Wonder Woman. And that was a really interesting read. So definitely check that out. And all the other good stuff on comicosity.com.
One from the Boydie.
Yeah. Hi, Jessica.
Yeah, awesome. So, Mike, how was your week in comics?
Well, a week and a bit. We've been off air for a couple of weeks. My comics reading has slacked off yet again. I've bought comics. I've not read any comics. I think I've read a couple, but clearly they didn't grab my interest to the point where I feel like mentioning them again now. Must have been completely forgettable. So,
just banking the comics for later.
Yeah, banking them up. See, my comic store does this kind of different thing where they get their deliveries monthly as opposed to weekly. So my pull file builds up every month. And because I get paid fortnightly, I only go in on the fortnight, and I say to them, give me X amount of dollars worth from my pull file. So they reach in and they pull out that much. But the thing is, I don't get them in sequence.
Yeah. Okay.
So one week I'll have like Wonder Woman 5, and the next time I go in there, I'll get Wonder Woman 15 and 14.
Oh.
Which makes reading them a little bit difficult. But when I do get them in sequence, like I know I've got Paper Girls, I think 7, 8, 9 sitting there waiting to be read, that's great. I get to sit and read, you know, them in a good chunk. But yeah,
that would drive me nuts, Mike. I would have to go in with a list of things I wanted to read at that point. That would be my approach.
But, I think I'm going to have to do that. And I know you'll love hearing this from me, but I'm almost tempted to just cut right back and dive into the world of trades.
Well, you'll save a fortune on the trades.
Yes.
You really will.
So other than crying over my ever-increasing to-reach pile, I've finished the series of Unfortunate Events on Netflix. That was lots of good fun and a really good interpretation of the books. That was really, and they do a song at the very end of the last episode, and oh, got me right in the multi-gizzards. And playing lots of Pathfinder Adventure Card Game.
Because I love that. Yes, like, I have seen your tweets.
Yes, it's a role-playing game in card game form, and it's brilliant. I love it. Anyway, what have you been up to these past
months? Oh, okay. I've been reading some Aussie comics.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so I've mentioned on the show Tim Stiles, Tim Stiles, who does Cthulhu Williams, the sort of horror comedy adventure Aussie comic, which he's released one issue of that, but he's been doing some other stuff online. So at the moment he has a comic, which is a web comic coming out a page every fortnight, I believe, called Gorilla My Dreams. Love that title, it's so good. But Yeah, it's got art by Ahmed Rafat. I probably murdered that name, which was one of the things we'd go over our way to do on this show.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there's like this gorilla who's a superhero in a town called Struggle Town. And it's only a few pages in, but there's a bit in it. I just love it. It's brilliant. There's a mime who's sort of people have been walking past him as he mimes out suffocating in a glass, invisible glass coffin. Right. Only the thing is, it really is an invisible coffin and he has suffocated.
That's a bit dark.
Yeah, so that's what the gorilla superhero has to investigate. And he's like, ugh. Mimes. Why does it have to be mimes?
I think we might need to get Wilfred to put up a link to that. To share it. It sounds very interesting.
Mm. Yeah, if you do a search for Gorilla My Dreams at Smack Jeeves, which I believe is the hosting, smackjeeves.com.
Right.
And the other thing Tim is doing is he's doing a Kickstarter at the moment to make variant covers of Sir Thule Williams. So he wants to make 100 sketch variants.
Oh, wow.
So he's already reached his goal, so which is really cool. He's got a bit of time to go. So if you want to get in on that, just go to Kickstarter and search for Sir Thule Williams or Big Tim Styles. So there's some fun pledges there which you might want to get in on.
Okay. Yeah.
So, yeah, and Sir Thule Williams is a fun comic and I want him to make more because I want to keep reading it. So this will help.
Sounds fair. Yeah.
But the weird thing is with the variant covers, the writer is doing the variant covers. Yeah.
Right.
So, yeah. But I mean, Grant Morrison is a writer who dabbles in art.
Yes.
There's precedent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's what I've been up to.
Cool.
Hmm. All right. Is that ticking that I hear?
What about that sign over there that points down towards Darrington Way?
Yes. Let's go down Darrington Way.
Oh, so rusty.
Sweet. Okay, when we get down on Darrington Way, we do see that there's a message from Jared Way on his Tumblr about Doom Patrol number 4, which is the most recent issue of Doom Patrol, which we reviewed on the last episode of Waiting for Doom. Mm-hmm. So this is the message, and this is how it reads. He says, "We did it! You did it! We all did it! The newest issue of Doom Patrol is finally here. We want to thank each and every one of you readers for being so supportive and patient and understanding. You are our champions, and you keep the book alive. And we are lucky to have you all, and we will keep delivering if you keep sticking around." We're going to stick around. I'm just going to point that out. Yeah. You going to stick around, Mike?
Yeah. I'm like 99% sure I will be.
Excellent.
How about you? Anyway,
yeah. I'm here.
Okay.
Yep, keep reading Doom Patrol. Big things happening and bigger things coming. Oh, and the title isn't just a meta nod to real life circumstances. So the issue was called I'm Sorry I'm Late.
Yes. That's why we titled the episode Just Don't Do It Again.
Yes, because we caught on to that after we made the episode.
Yeah.
Anyway, he says, and the title isn't just a meta nod to the real life circumstances of the book. It also has to do with a certain character being unable to get somewhere in time. I'm intrigued.
We were wondering that, but we couldn't figure out who that might have been.
Yeah, we will speculate on into the future about that. Anyways, he said, so much to talk about in this issue. The team really got was really excited to introduce you all to Lucius Reynolds, Sam's son, and things are really starting to come together and connect. I think you're hopefully been getting more answers to your questions. The pacing is starting to pick up and we're all in a mad dash to the finish line, including Casey. Nick really outdid himself with this issue. My favorite page is in the issue involves Fugg's reveal. Now, I think that's the cassette player reveal.
Yep.
One of our favourites too. Mm. And he has been such an amazing partner in all of this, as well as Tamara Bonville, our amazing colourist. Yesterday was Colourist Appreciation Day and our book wouldn't be what it is without her magical work. Mm-hmm. And we all continue to surprise each other. Legendary Todd Klein handling the lettering brilliantly as usual. The whole package was edited by Jamie S. Rich and he got the good stuff out for us in this one. An issue was part of the amazing Paul Rentler variant cover month and this variant was one of my favourites, though I loved all of them.
Mm.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Yes, and talking of Nick, he's been doing some arting. I think that's a word. So he did a picture of Sweaty Casey.
Yes. Sweaty Casey.
It's very well rendered. And he's also been making a Robot Man head out of clay or something, but now it looks like he's adding metal colour to it. So.
Oh, nice.
And lots of people on Twitter. He did a sketch of Batman a while ago in just in pencil and ink, and it looks like people are grabbing that and colouring it. So he's been retweeting those, which is always fun to look at.
Oh, cool.
I wish I could be a colourist. I don't think I have what it takes, but I marvel at it.
Yeah. To be honest, colouring in comics is something that has interested me, and I've even looked into courses that are available online because there seems to be a bit of a... Well, there was back when I was looking into it, a demand for flatterers or flatters who do like the base level colours. Uh-huh. Then the actual colourers go over and add embellishments to and add the fine detail. Like we see with Tamra where she does the hues, like we saw on the negative planet in the previous issue. So it's like the flatters help the colourers get their work done quicker. Sort of splitting up the job, but apparently it's dull and tedious and really boring work because I believe Chris Sabella has done some of that himself, and he's not a fan.
Yeah, so. I'm not very good with the hues. I can barely tell my Lorries from my Jackmans.
Oh, God.
Anyway, is that ticking? I hear
it is ticking. Thank God, it's the doom clock. Okay, so we look upon the face of the mighty, mighty Doom Clock, and it's telling us that the last Doom Patrol book we had came out only 2 weeks ago. Yes, issue 4 of Volume 6, which we talked about on our previous issue, and we loved very, very much. So yeah, only 2 weeks since the last Doom Patrol book. The next issue, issue 5, is due out 22nd of February 2017, so only 2 weeks away.
Oh!
I know.
Continue. 2 weeks passed and 2 weeks to wait.
Oh, it's like they're back on schedule.
It's beautiful symmetry.
It is. The last appearance of the Patrol as a team was 1 year and 26 weeks ago in two different comics, All-Star Section 8, number 3, and Justice League United, number 12. But we should see them back, united, together, again, as the Doom Patrol by issue 6 of volume 6. Although this illicit info for issue 5 says the team will probably be back together by that issue.
So yeah,
I think given what happened in issue 4, and like Gerard himself says, it's all coming together. So I think issue 5 is going to be the big one, I think.
Yeah.
And this week in Doom Patrol history, going on sale for $2.50 on February 6th, 2002, with a cover date of April 2002, was Doom Patrol issue 5 from volume 3 by John Arcudi and Tan Eng Huat. And this one was titled Fade. And the issue saw the combined might of two Doom Patrols take on Now Yut and his disciples turn demons with catastrophic results for Robot Man.
So oh, dear.
I won't give anything away because we only covered this one really recently in our first episode for 2017, episode 81. So you can check that out for more. And that's it for the Doom Clock this week.
No, it ain't.
It ain't?
It ain't. I've got a live update. Doom Patrol number 5 is now shipping on the 1st of March.
Oh, son of a... I was almost going to say, unless they change the shipping date on us again at the last minute, and what's happened?
God. That's a one-week shift, though. It's not a two-week shift.
Right. So what was that date again, Paul? March?
1st of March.
March 1. Just going to update some notes here live in the show for the listeners.
You know? March Fool's Day, it's called.
We're the bloody fool. Didn't we install, you know, shipping date detectors in Wilfred? Slacking off.
But that's a heavy Doom Patrol day because I believe that's the day that the director's cut of Doom Patrol number 1 comes out as well.
Well, unless that's been pushed back now as well.
No, it's still on track.
You say that now.
I do say that now. That's why we have a Doom Clock.
All right, March 1st, 3 weeks away. Can I now put the Doom Clock away?
Yeah, go for it, Mike.
Throwing it against the wall, bloody thing. Let's move on.
Hello, ladies. Listen to your man. Now listen to me. Now listen to your man. Now listen to me. Sadly, he isn't me. But if he stopped downloading lame-ass podcasts and switched to Two True Freaks, he could learn to sound like me. Look down. Back up. Where are you? You're on the Enterprise with a man your man could sound like. What's in your hand? Back at me. I have it. It's a long box filled with comics that you love. Look again. The comics are now episodes. Anything is possible when your man listens to Two True Freaks and not lame asses. I'm on a tauntaun.
This is Doomsplaining, the part of the show. But before we get into that, I have recently seen an interesting interview with Richard Case, which was put out on the internet by DC in the 80s, that website.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and it was a fascinating interview. It was really worth reading, and I'd just like to point everyone to go look at DC in the 80s. One of the things that in that was really fascinating was that Negative Man and Negative Woman were originally the two that were meant to merge. That was Grant Morrison's plan, but DC wouldn't let them do that, and I presume that's because Paul Kupperberg had sort of a bit of ownership interest in Val Vostok as a character. Yes. So instead they created the Doctor character, Eleanor Poole, who became the merging female in that. But that's really interesting. That would have been good, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
But, yeah, kudos to DC in the 80s for that excellent interview. And they also put out a webzine. Well, it's a zine that you can print and make into a physical zine called Baxter Stock. And that sort of was a compilation of some of their best interviews and bits and pieces and some new art by a friend of the show, Michelle Fife. I am butchering names left, right, and centre tonight. Aren't I, Mick? Anyway,
yeah, you sure are, Flummer.
Yeah, so that has really good. And that had an excerpt of an interview with Steve Lytle, who did Doom Patrol Volume 2 the very start and soon racked off because it wasn't going good. Yeah, there's some background there on what was going through his mind at that point and difficulties he was having. So interesting stuff and worth a read. So go look for their zine Baxter Stock and print it out and staple it together. And it's just like a little zine that you can carry around and you can read on the bus and people go, what are you reading? I'm reading Baxter Stock, a zine. And then you start a craving for it amongst strangers.
Yes. Well, they might become friends after that.
Yeah. Like neighbors becoming friends.
Yes.
Anyway. What are we talking about? We're talking about Doomsplaining now. So, yes, today on the show, we're looking at Doomforce. It's a special. It's a Doom Patrol special. What is it? It's confusing to people, I'm sure. But this came out after Grant Morrison's issue 57 and before issue 58. So we are coming at it in the exact point that we ought to. Yes, and it's fair to say it's a send-up of Image Comics as they were at that time in 1992.
You think?
So Image Comics were, for those of you who don't know, a comic company formed by artists from other companies who were very successful and riding a wave of a speculator popularity and megastardom. So they basically, very ballsy, they cut while the going was good and formed their own company to take control of their own destinies, and they all sort of created their own characters like Spawn and Savage Dragon, and Rob Liefeld created Youngblood, and basically this new comic company came out of nowhere and conquered all at the time. It was pretty derided by the people who've been in the industry for a long time because they saw everyone as upstarts, and the art wasn't as full of skill as they might expect to see in a comic company, but the people
depending on who draw the whichever comic, there might be feet missing.
There might be feet missing, yes. There might be feats of anatomy that are peculiar. There might be proportions that are, there's a bit too much leg going on and not enough torso and things
like. There might be very little plot.
There might be very little plot. There might be very little clothing. Anyway. It's fair to say this comic, Doomforce, is a satirical reaction to that trend in the industry.
Yes.
But it's quite amusing. So it came out, when did it come out? It came out cover dated July 1992, but actually came out on the 9th of June 1992. Cover price of $2.95. It's a 64-page comic. It was edited by Tom Payer. who's also a writer occasionally, titled by, it was Judgment Day, which is a very Image type title. It was all written by Grant Morrison, and with art by a whole bunch of people. So there was art by Steve Pugh, pencils by Ian Montgomery, Brad Vacanter, Richard Case, who does the regular Doom Patrol issues at this time. Walt Simonson did some inking. Mm-hmm. Paris Cullens from, what was he? He was famous for Blue Devil and things like that. Oh. And he's still working in comics today on Aquaman and things like that. Ray Crissing, Duke Mighton, which has to be a pseudonym. I don't know who that is. Mark McKenna, Ken Stacey, Johnny Workman Jr. did the letters, and it was all coloured by Daniel Vozzo. And it has a cover which was penciled by Keith Giffen and inked by Mike Mignola of Hellboy fame. So, Mike, do you want to take us through the cover and what we see in this issue?
Well, the cover has, well, it can only be the Doom Force themselves. We see lots of big weaponry. We see lots of grimaces, a couple of angry-looking women. We see a man who appears to be a mountain, literally a mountain. There's another man crying. There's a big call-out box saying, which one of these heroes will die? Another one saying, collectible first appearance. So it's all
I love that the call-out, the arrow says, which one of these heroes will die, is pointing at one of the heroes.
Yeah, I didn't want to say which one.
We'll get into that. But everyone looks like they're screaming.
Mm. It's the majority of the issue is very much in the art style of Rob Liefeld.
Fair to say.
Mm.
Yeah. I've got to say, I really admire Rob Liefeld. I find his enthusiasm is really infectious. Like, he's a guy who wants things and goes out and makes it happen. Like, you know, I wish I could hustle like Rob Liefeld does. You know, and, you know, he's done a lot with not being the most, you know, artistically developed style, you know, but he... You know, the kids love him. Back then, the kids went wild for his stuff.
Yes. Look, he's still definitely got his fans, you know. He still also has his detractors because, yeah, some of his art does raise an eyebrow.
But I think back then particularly he had a real energy to his art, which I think he has lost somewhat over the years. Like, I look at some of the later stuff he did for DC when he came back with Hawk and Dove, and I think it's not as exciting as when he first started with Hawk and Dove. So,
I will admit, back in the day, I did buy the first issue of Young Blood, and it was very exciting stuff.
Yeah, I still got one of them. I got it bagged and boarded because it's going to be worth a fortune.
Yep, planned your retirement on that one, my friend.
Yeah.
Over time, I became less of a fan of his stuff. But there is one image that he did of Captain America at some point, which our listeners probably know the one I'm speaking of, where it's sort of like a side profile of Cap, and his chest is just gigantic. Like, completely out of proportion with the rest of him, but he's got this big puffed up chest, and you kind of look at him and go, oh, come on, Rob.
And he is the co-creator of Deadpool.
This is true, yes.
Deadpool and Cable. And
oh, God. I used to be so much into Cable and the X-Men and X-Force as well at the time. So reading this did make me think back to that. A sort of early to mid-90s period of the X-Men and his tenure on them. So, well, you know, X-Force. So, yeah.
All righty. What's inside, Mike?
So we open the issue and we see a convoy of army vehicles making their way through the Nevada desert. And there's all sorts of weaponry being traveled through the desert there. And we're being told that there are secrets within the desert. Hidden bases, hidden experimental facilities, and suddenly this convoy is blown up. And there's nothing but charred vehicles and smoking bones left in the desert. Of course. But we cut away to the secret headquarters of the Doom Force. And we're interested in them. And we're introduced to the Crying Boy, Shasta the Living Mountain, Flux, the Scratch, and Spinner. Now, the easiest one to describe is Spinner, because that's basically Dorothy Spinner, the eight-faced girl, but she's been sexed up just a bit, wearing a very tight-fitting dress. She's got large breasts, and she's kind of got a Cruella de Vil thing going on with her hair. Scratch, he's kind of like Wolverine and a bit of Cable. He's got all this armor and these sort of various weapons and instruments coming out of his knuckles, and he has large shoulder and knee pads that all say Scratch, kind of in the lettering of the Coca-Cola logo.
Whichever way he turns, they all say Scratch at the camera.
Flux is sort of wearing a head-to-toe form-fitting body costume, and she's sort of bent at an odd angle so that her butt cheeks are up in the air facing the reader. She has a long red ponytail sticking out from the top of the costume. And I'm not sure, her costume is white with, like, they look like little black balloons all over her costume, but I'm not sure if that's what they're meant to be. Shasta the Living Mountain is clearly the team strongman. He looks like a mountain. His costume has got like a snowy summit with like a little ski chairlift going up the side. And he's grimacing. And then the crying boy kind of looks like, he looks a bit like Sting.
Old Sting,
yes, and he's kind of running forward. He's got like a short red cape draped over him, and his leg is just clearly out of proportion with the rest of them. And they're all running towards the reader, and we see that they're under attack from some robotic beings, and they're being cheered on by a giant floating eye with fists who's telling them, "Destroy Doomforce, go, my robot allies, destroy them." And Scratch is saying, "These creeps have overrun our headquarters. What are we waiting for, Dorothy? Let's take them." And she says, "Just wait for my order. Remember who's leading the team." So clearly Dorothy's the leader of the team, which is a nice change from how we normally see her. And she's reaching into the minds of these robotic beings and latching onto their deepest nightmares and giving those nightmares form. So I don't quite know how she can do that with the robots. But we see like a red hooded head and a skull sort of appear before the robots, and they start freaking out, going no, and and then we cut to Crying Boy, whose real name is Kenneth, we learn, and he became the Crying Boy when he absorbed the mysterious energies of a cheap painting. He was once the most popular kid in school, but now he's cursed with bad luck power from the painting. Wherever he goes, misfortune is sure to follow. And he sheds a single tear, and a phone on the wall starts to ring. And one of these robot guys answers it, and he suddenly breaks down. And another robot comes up to him and says, "What's going on?" And the first one says, "It's my hollow mate. I've known him since we were both built. He's been melted down. There was no reason why. Oh, Lord, why?" The other robot comforts him, and Crying Boy thinks to himself, "My power can be a curse as well as a blessing. I cause so much heartache." Oh. And then we cut to Scratch as he's leaping into action, doing the full Wolverine pose with his... He's got like a knife and a bottle opener and a screwdriver coming out of his...
It's like Swiss Army claws. They're all these little utensils.
So he's screaming and he's basically leaping into the fray, and, you know, he's the best at what he does, but fortunately no one else does it. His power is basically to dismantle anything down to its component parts, from living systems to robots. So the robots are quickly dispatched. We then cut over to Shasta the Living Mountain, and he's just standing there. And he thinks to himself... "I'm useless. Everyone hates me because all I can do is turn into a mountain." So that's all he can do. And as the fight's going on, we get introduced to Flux and her powers. Apparently she was snatched by dingoes in the Australian outback. And her real name is Danny Melvin. She was raised by an Aboriginal witch doctor who taught her the shape-shifting powers of the Dreamtime.
As they do.
They do, of course. And now she is Flux, able to assume any form. And she turns herself into a giant hole in the floor, which some of the robots fall into. Of course.
Clever.
Great. Yeah. And so Scratch gets close to the giant floating eyeball and throws one of his gadgets at him, and it dismantles the giant eye completely. And he says, "We got them all. Now, where's the head? Where's Niles?" And it turns out that Niles Calder is still the head of the Doom Force. And we see him, and he's sort of floating in this pink cube. And as the image pulls back, we realize he's floating in a giant ice cube inside a giant fancy cocktail glass, which is on some sort of wheeled device, like a car chassis.
It's an action coaster.
The action coaster. He reveals to the team that it was actually him that created those attacking robots, and he did it as pretty much a training exercise to make sure that the team is still a well-oiled machine and that they're ready for anything. Because he's worried that their arch-nemesis, Anton Zero, is going to come back. And they've apparently faced him before when he called himself Count Zero and he took command of something called the Omega Helix. And they're like, right, okay. And again, it's another very Rob Liefeld-looking villain. Lots of bullets and guns strapped to his arm, and he's got a giant belt of pouches. Liefeld was big on the pouches. But we see on the giant screen, yes, they still have a giant monitor, that there's this giant structure which is basically in the shape of a head with sort of robotic limbs coming out of it and a city on the very top of the head. That's what's appeared in the middle of the Nevada desert. And that's the thing that disrupted the Army U.S. supply routes and lines of communication. And Niles is saying that, you know, this is an early photograph, and as you can see, it's still under construction. But very soon it's going to be operational. So the team are all freaking out, and they realize they've got no other course of action other than to take on Count Zero. And we cut away to the inside of this giant structure, where we see Count Zero sitting there in his chair, with a bit of man-spreading going on. Again, he's got the classic Rob Liefeld villain scowl. Well, some of his heroes scowl that way as well. And beside him is his sister, Una. And, God, she's wearing a very revealing dress. we can see a bit of side boob there, and it goes right down to her navel, and the hem of the dress is barely beneath that. So Anton is telling her, everything is perfect. Yeah, your powers have served us well in taking control of this vast city. I've only one question for you, my sister. Why must you insist on covering yourself up? And she says, what? I was a little cold. Surely this dress is sufficiently revealing for cold? What kind of excuse is that to be dressed like some woman out on a day trip to Alaska? Go and change into something more befitting our heritage. And she walks off, and yeah, her costume leaves very little to the imagination. we then see Anton's talking to some very strange looking monstrous creature. He's kind of got wings and he's all white, but, you know, has a mirror mask over his head. And this creature's telling him that, you know, their systems have detected superhuman presences, and we believe it's the ones you call the Doom Force. Of course, Anton says, go now, go and destroy my enemies. And so they take off, and the Doom Force are there. They've arrived at the scene, and an army general comes up and says, you see what we're up against here? My men just don't stand a chance against that thing. The head itself seems totally impregnable. And at that point, these white winged warriors come out of the head all on motorbikes, as you do. And the army general's freaking out, saying, it's them, they're coming back. And they're roaring towards the Doom Force. And Scratch says to them, this looks like my kind of job. So he takes off. Crying Boy and Dorothy hop on this bizarre, fantastical jet bike, which, who knows where they got that from. So they take off, and immediately the jet bike comes under fire, and there are missiles heading off and firing into them. And meanwhile, Scratch is leaping into the fray, his Scratch shoulder pads and knee pads with his name emblazoned for everyone to see, so we know who he is. And he says, let me introduce myself. And he starts cutting into them. And the fight's going on and on and on, and suddenly Dorothy and Crying Boy realize that their jet bike's not going to last, and so they crash it into the side of the mountain head, and they leap off and land in an opening in the side of the head. Thank goodness.
They scramble inside and are suddenly held at gunpoint by a now more appropriately skimpily dressed Una. But Spinner swiftly disarms her. Una is not thwarted, though, and uses her powers over plants and minerals to grow these tendrils out of the floor that ensnare the Doom Force duo. She brings Spinner and the Crying Boy before her brother Anton Zero, and he says, ah, Doom Force, the last time we met, Spinner, you made the mistake of humiliating me in front of Miasma. I have yet to pay you back. And he smacks her across the face with his cane. But Spinner is still defiant, and Anton will see if that lasts when she is dressed in something more appropriately feminine and also something for Crying Boy from his own wardrobe. Kinky. Anton then takes half a page of text to explain that the city is like an antibody of the Earth, and it's produced to fight pollution, except he and his sister have taken control, and they will use it to destroy their enemies, starting with a march on Los Angeles. March? Says Spinner. Everyone suddenly understands as the ground beneath the giant head tears open and the head rises on this equally gargantuan body, and these giant feet crush all in its path as it starts its march on LA. And then an army of flying silver creatures, the things that were on motorbikes before, they come flying down and attack the Doom forces still outside. But Flux and the Scratch are ready, while Shasta, the Living Mountain, says, "There must be something I can do to help." Now, the Scratch, who's also known as Morgan Morgan, that's his real name, can only say, "You shut up and keep out of this." This proves to be the final push that Shasta needed, and he monologues about being sick of being treated this way, and he will make Morgan proud, and he grows until he is a mountain the same size as the giant body strolling towards him. And the giant body starts pounding on Shasta, and the Scratch is climbing up Shasta, and there's ski lifts on Shasta and skiers and things like that. And there's a great big fight with the silver creatures on the slopes and chairlifts, and he's taking many of them out before finally riding a detached chairlift down a snowy bank and then off of a cliff to certain death. But suddenly a pinky finger reaches out, and it's Flux, and he grabs her with his pinky finger, and Flux has sprouted wings, and she's grabbed him just in time.
Ooh.
Inside the head, Anton is preparing to kill Spinner and Crying Boy. Spinner asks Anton about the futility of this conflict, giving Crying Boy the chance to use his bad luck powers. Suddenly, a delivery man arrives with a telegram, and Anton reads it and collapses into a chair defeated. He was bidding on a beach house, and he's been outbid. Anyway, Spinner uses this moment to ask Una why she is wearing such skimpy clothes, while Anton wears a tailored suit, and Anton speaks for her. "You enjoy wearing those clothes. Every strong woman must feel free to express her femininity by wearing exotic lingerie." But Una can only add, "But I'm freezing cold." Anton has had enough of this and tears off his suit to reveal a tiny patriotic shield-shaped G-string. Suddenly, Flux and the Scratch burst in, and Anton and his sister escape, inexplicably, to a nearby hangar where a plane laden with nuclear warheads is fueled and waiting. They can still destroy Los Angeles. The plane flies out of the giant's left ear, much to the giant's surprise. And Shasta Cesio has only one chance to earn the respect of his teammates. He strains and he grows a bit more, and he blocks the flight path of the plane. The plane and the man who is a mountain are both destroyed in the ensuing blast. The team is stunned as they gather around the tiny pile of ash that is all that remains of Shasta, the Living Mountain. They start to eulogize him and his sacrifice, but the Scratch puts a stop to it. "Who cares?" he says. Perhaps he's squirming when confronted by his own mortality. Perhaps he's not comfortable with the outpouring of emotion. Perhaps he's just an arsehole who can't stand Shasta. Anyway, the team decide to get some takeaway and have a big laugh as the screen freezes and the credits roll. Oh. So, Mike, what do you think of this?
It's more enjoyable than I remembered it being, to be honest. It's a really good piss take of early Image stuff.
Yeah,
but it's got some nice Doom Patrol touches in there as well. Yeah. But it's a very silly read.
It is. Yeah, I love the page that introduces Doom Force. It's a double page spread. It has a prominent signature on one side, and it's got a price tag in the other, and it's $2,500. Several of the characters are introduced with their own splash pages.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, they're posing for pinups, like Who's Who pages.
Yeah.
There's prominent signatures for out. But can we talk about the anatomy and the way some of the characters are drawn?
Oh, God.
Steve Pugh does some really nice inks and pencils himself, and that's probably some of my favourite pages. So that's the page where the sky cycle crashes into the head,
mm-hmm.
and they burst in. And when the Scratch is fighting, try this, okay? Squat down.
Right.
Yeah? mm-hmm. flex your arms back as far as they'll go, so you, towards the join them towards the shoulders.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Now bring your arms up. Take them down.
Right.
And bring them up through your legs.
Hang on, I'm gonna fall over.
And then flex them in front of your chest.
Wait a minute. Oh shit! I think I pulled something.
That's what's happening in one panel. It looks fantastic. Yeah. And you know, legs bend in ways they shouldn't. Feet get tiny.
I do love the commentary on women's clothing in this as well.
Yeah, so Una gets out of this, you know, very slutty outfit and comes back, and she's basically wearing like two, it looks like children's saucer teacups on her nipples.
Mm, and then a heart-shaped G-string.
Yeah, and then joined by little bits of string.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing that stands out to me in this one is the amount of, I think it's called cross-hatching, where there's just sort of like the cross-hatching, but it's like everywhere on in the backgrounds, on the faces, on the vehicles, and the amount of that being used, and the speed lines as well, which is something we don't always see in Doom Patrol stuff, but it's very early image stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. And poor Shasta.
Poor Shasta, the living mountain.
We can reveal that Shasta was the one with the sign pointing to him that said, which one of these heroes will die on the cover.
Poor bastard.
Yeah.
He just...
Now, one thing I really liked, it has a, instead of a letters page, this comic has like a editorial about what they did and why they did it.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the best things about this is they mention all the hero names that they created for use in Doom Force. So I'll list them all. And they've all got TM at the end of them. So Air Gun, All Night, Basement, Blender, Bludgeon, Boilermaker, Brain Pan, Buck, Burn Through, Campfire, Chain Link, Condiment, Crosshatch, Diaphragm, 8-Track, Figurine, Flatline, Fledgling, Fortress, Goatee, Gridlock, Grimace, Hairline, Headbutt, Headache, Homeboy, Hourglass, Hud, Hurl, Hutch, Kennel, Lock and Load, both with TMs, Lube, Magazine, Menthol, Mimosa, Nubian, Off-Ramp, Pinata, Plaque, Pose, Postage, Postscript, Prop, Quasi, Ratchet, Rimshot, Rivet, Rusky, Sassy, Seizure, Severe, Shaker, Shot Put, Snarl, Snot, Spatula, Spinal, Style, Swing Shift, Timesheet, TM, Toboggan, Toe Jam, Tosser, Tree, Utensil, Vicious, Xylophone, Yahoo, Zone.
I think it was one of them actually called TM.
TM. Yeah, so plenty more ideas. It's a pity they didn't keep going with the Doom Force.
Oh yeah, it's a true loss. To us, the readers, and yeah.
Because of issue 53, which was the sort of Fantastic Four rift, I like to imagine that this is another one of Danny the Street's dreams.
Yeah, that's one way to explain it. Sure, yeah.
And perhaps he'd been reading some Image comics and. Yeah, anyway.
That would explain it, yeah.
But it's a weird placement in the run, isn't it? Because we've just had some horrific moments and revelations in issue 57, and this is the next thing people get to read.
Yeah, it's... I mean, I know it's hard to say. It doesn't quite make sense when talking about anything to do with the Doom Patrol, but after the gut punch of that proper issue, and then there this thing. yeah it's I'm not quite sure what the thinking was there in the scheduling. Maybe it was meant to be like it was such a cliffhanger in 57 and people wanted to know what was going to happen next, and they thought, haha, we're going to zig instead of zagging, and we're going to give you this.
Well, it looked like a burning desire to take the piss out of Image Comics, I think.
Oh, that too, yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, there is one little bit of continuity, and that is the fact that the Chief has had his head ripped off.
Yes. Which, again, you know, gives credence to your thought that this is just another one of Danny's dreams.
Yeah, so. Perhaps. Mm. Anyway, that's what helps me get through it.
Right. Oh, dearie me. Yeah, it's a good parody of Image at the time, because that's what they were known for when they first launched.
Yeah.
All the big, grim, gritty, you know, posturing heroes and, you know, yeah. And just, it's yeah, so it's a good send-up, but it's also a bit of a head-scratcher, really.
Oh, dear. Anyway, should we leave it there?
Yeah, I think we've doomsplained that one enough.
Hey, who likes Wild Dog?
Who let the dogs out? Who let the dogs out?
No, 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 no. I'm taking this podcast seriously. There's no way that song will appear anywhere in the show or even the ads. I'm doing this right. I'm FKA Jason from the Silver and Gold Podcast at sngpod.com. I'm here to tell you about a special podcast I've been working on. Wild Pod, a Wild Dog podcast, is a series covering the DC Comics character that is sort of their answer to the Punisher, Wild Dog. I'll be covering all appearances of the character in all forms of media. What began as a little mini-series about one of my favorite non-Mort DC characters has become a regular ongoing podcast that I love and have no plans to end anytime soon. You can listen at sngpod.com or on iTunes, Shout Engine, or Stitcher.
Born to be wild. Born to be wild.
Time for the Mailbag of Doom. And last time on the show, we asked you, what is your favorite parody? Because we covered a bit of a parody issue in this episode. And first off, we heard from Big Tim Styles at Big Tim Styles on the Twitters. And he said, favorite parody? Avengers porn parody. I've said too much. Right.
Ooh, okay.
That's my secret, Captain. I'm always horny. Sorry.
You've seen it, Mike.
No, I just thought of that just then. Honest.
We heard from Saul Bishop, and he said Doomforce.
Nice.
Yeah.
Good choice. We heard from Rogue Frack at Fractures, and he said his favorite parody is a movie, and it's Spaceballs.
We heard from Martin Gray at Mark Gray, and he said Petra Mead and Mons Zemelo doing Love, Love, Peace, Peace at last year's Eurovision, which I looked at this, and it's basically someone looking at all the Eurovision winners and saying, what are all the common elements and all the things that you need to have to win? And it was like a parody song which had all of those elements in the one song.
It was glorious.
Yeah, it was amazing, wasn't it?
As a fan of Eurovision, yeah, it was a perfect send-up. Yeah, yeah. Oh, look, we heard from Cameron Williams at Wasgo, and his favourite parody is Batman. What?
Oh.
Dear me.
We heard from Bobgar Ornelis at Slurmo, and he said, not Doomforce. Oh.
Right.
Anti-answers tonight.
We heard from at Ostrakus1, Kevin, otherwise known this time as We Met Lever Chain Kit. And he said, oh man, I don't think I can choose between Airplane and Spaceballs.
Interesting fact about Airplane. It was called Flying High in Australia.
This is true.
Anyway, we heard from Relatively Geeky, who's Professor Allen, and he said, the Get Smart TV show.
Yep.
I did love that. Yeah, it was very good.
It was a bit good. Yeah. Moby1 wrote in, at Shmoby1 on Twitter, and he said, Spaceballs. Lots of love for Spaceballs.
Another one for Spaceballs. We heard from House of Gun at House of Gun, and he said, across any medium, if so, anything of Weird Al's discography, but but perhaps especially The Saga Begins. That's the Star Wars song, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Over on the Facebook page, we heard from David Ennis, and he said, off the top of my head, what comes immediately to mind is Galaxy Quest. Yes.
Oh, that's such a good film.
That's a great one, yes.
And we heard from Ruth Sutherland of the Sutherlands podcasts, and she said Robin Hood, Men in Tights, Get Smart on TV, and Terry Pratchett's entire Discworld series.
Mm. Some good choices. Still on Facebook, we heard from Cliff Steele.
Cliff Steele?
Yeah. Well, yes. And wow. their Facebook avatar is of Cliff Steele, so must be legit. And Cliff said, Galaxy Quest, definitely. Laughed my ass off at National Lampoon's Loaded Weapon back in the day as well.
Oh, okay. Nice. We had from Rifty, and he said, all-time movie fave, Spaceballs. And he said, Men in Tights, pretty good too. Song, Eat It by Weird Al. Comedy album, All the 12th Man Stuff, which is a cricket parody for people who aren't in Australia.
Mm.
Mm. I love in Men in Tights how Prince John's mole keeps moving every time you see him. In a different spot. I love that.
Jay Bandoy at W Bandoy on Twitter said he completely agrees with Fractures and Shmoby One, his favorite parody by far. Even though I love Star Wars, I'm not in love with Star Wars.
So another one for Spaceballs. Mm, wow.
Yeah.
We have from Dr. Ange 70, who's Ange to us, and he said Get Smart was my vote, but taken by Professor Alan, so I'll go Austin Powers, but only the first movie. Yeah, I agree with that. Only the first one.
Now, we also heard from Darren Sutherland on the My Greatest Adventure 80.blogspot.com site, run by our friend Doug. Now, his responses were his favorite parody, film, Robin Hood, Men in Tights, TV, Get Smart, books, Terry Pratchett's entire Discworld series.
It's remarkably similar to his wife's picks.
Yes, yes. So I don't know if one of them's parodying the other. Or what's going on? Or maybe they just have very similar tastes.
Well, that's weird, because on their podcast, they constantly argue with each other.
Right. Well,
no, they don't. I'm just joking. All right,
Paul,
Mike.
What's your favorite parody? Come on.
I'm surprised no one said it, but Spinal Tap.
Oh, you bastard. You stole my answer.
Ah! I couldn't believe no one said it.
I know. I was surprised as well. Spinal Tap is a perfect rockumentary piss take. Oh, from the whole Stonehenge thing alone.
Yes. So if you don't know, Spinal Tap is a fake documentary about a fake rock band, and it's hilarious.
Yeah. It really sticks it to rock and roll bands who think they're bigger and better than everyone else.
Dumb artists.
I was trying to be diplomatic there.
That's what it's all about.
And trying to find their way from backstage out onto the stage. And when they decided to have like alien pods on the stage that they were going to come out from, and one of them gets trapped in it. I'll have to watch
it. I want to watch it again right now.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yes, that's my answer as well then. For those exact
Well done, Mike.
Go team. Go us. What an episode.
Yeah. Awesome. Anyway, people are wondering what we're doing next week on the show, maybe. Or maybe they're not. Maybe they're thinking about what they're going to have for dinner after listening. Or breakfast, depending on when they listen. I don't know. We could be thinking about their day at work. Anyway, next week on the show, if you're wondering, we're going to be doing more Doom Patrol issues. We're doing Volume 2. So we're carrying on straight away with more Grant Morrison. We're going to do Issue 58 and 59. So we'll find out what's happened after all that carnage in 57.
Mm.
And the question of the week that we want to know for next week is, where would you most want to be locked in overnight?
Right.
Yeah.
Cool.
Think about it. Anyway, if you want to get in touch with us, you can send us answers on the Twitter at WFDpod. You can email them to waitingfordoom@gmail.com. There's the Facebook page. And, of course, you can always go to Doug's website and look at his excellent post and then leave a comment afterwards at mygreatestadventure80.blogspot.com. Yeah. All right, Mike, let's get out of here.
Let's get out of here. Thanks for listening, guys. We'll catch you all again next time for more Waiting for Doom.
Waiting for Doom. Bye.